It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Friends and nerds, it is Tuesday, June the 9th, which means it's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 143 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Maxion, and I have with me my fellow nerd, my fellow connoisseur of comedy, my fellow comrade in gaming commentary. He's not just the first option, but he is the best option. Mr. Lomgaluka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. Mr. Nice Guy, how are you doing this week, man?
You know what? I'm doing well, Mac. And I feel like I need to come out with a new comedy special so that the first option is not the only reference. Maybe the next one will be called the second option. So hardcore fans know, hey, he's building on it like Jay-Z, how he did volume one, volume two, volume three, and so on. But no, I'm doing well, man. I've reached the point where on social media, I feel like it's okay to tweet about video games again, man. You know, the world is a rough place, but we've gotta be happy. We've got to have fun. You know, if you're enjoying a video game, tweet about it. Don't let people guilt you into not enjoying your life. So I've been tweeting about games, playing games, and just having a good time, man. Went camping, my friend, last weekend with the kids and the wife. And that was quite the experience. We did all the stuff you do when you're camping. We did marshmallowing. Is that what the term is?
Absolutely. It's what all the kids are calling it these days.
Yeah, marshmallowing. You know, we peed in a hole.
We call that latrining.
Yeah, we kept it real authentic, you know, real camp gangster, if that's the term. So life is good. How is it for you?
It's all right. At the current moment, as those of you who are here live can see, and even afterward, you might be able to tell that there's a ever so slight difference in the audio, and there's definitely a difference in the visual. I am on the road. I have had a certain window of opportunity to return to Utah and pick up some belongings that I left behind when we moved to Nebraska, and number two, there is this yearly thing that we do, and if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you are probably familiar that we do this sort of 5-minute movie thing that we make with the kids. And Mr. Nice Guy compared it recently in a recent episode to the 24-hour theater that the local university would do, which is very apro. And so we did that on Monday, and it was delightful. So fun to have all of the nieces and nephews together, make a film. As a matter of fact, one of the nephews was actually old enough, and he had practiced on, you know, some basic video editing, that he was the one who took charge on the video editing. It was great. He did a great job. But he forgot to save his work. And when the old computer that he was working on inevitably crashed, we lost the whole thing, the whole edited thing.
Oh, okay.
So we still had the original clips, right? But the problem was is that, you know, the editing was gone and all of his hard work. And I mean, I really felt for him because I had been there before, but those are the kinds of mistakes that, you know, you kind of only make once. So anyway, he will be better off because of it, but I do feel sad for him. Nonetheless, I put in a few extra hours and edited it together. The kids saw it, they enjoyed it. It's just a fun time is had by all. So a little bit of fun, excitement, adventure here, and I'll have the opportunity to, you know, to take some much needed entertainment / essentials from here and take them back to Nebraska with me. It'll be nice to have my motorcycle again, for example.
That's awesome. And then you can do live streams from the motorcycle, right?
Well, Nebraska's so flat, I don't know as they would be that interesting. They were very interesting in the southern Utah area because, you know, I mean, mountains and glorious vistas of terrifying beauty. But, I mean, it's, yeah, not so much in Nebraska.
It is what it is. Well, Mac, I'm hyped for today's episode, and I know that the people who are here live with us are as well. So I say we do what we do best and we hop right into that gaming news, man. What do you think about that?
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is episode number 143 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the, what, Mac, the multiverse? Is that the,
Absolutely, you better believe it's the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk about one of our favorite gaming stores to start, GameStop, where I know I buy all of my games and Mac buys all of his games, and I'm not at all being sarcastic. This is on GameSpot.com, and Mac, you know, we're going through this thing of summarizing stories, but it is written by Eddie Mackick, and the headline tells the tale. GameStop loses $165 million after temporarily closing more than 3,000 stores due to COVID-19, but it also says that the video game retailer's digital sales increased by more than 500%. So, I mean, is this, you know, we talk about a digital-only future. If we look at this in maybe a positive way, is this a good thing for GameStop that maybe people relied on them for digital stuff? Or do you think that the hit to their bottom line is just going to push them further towards bankruptcy?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't have a problem with digital distribution. My big concern is the digital as the only method for having right. the game. So, but I mean, I think that in this situation, especially where it was ill-advised to go out and obtain your copies in person, I am quite pleased that GameStop had a 500% increase in online sales, and I don't mind that at all as having been a thing, because I don't feel like that is pushing us away from having physical copies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, 100%. Now, on that note, this is kind of a side news story, but there's a rumored console called the Xbox Lockhart, and people were talking to me about it in my stream yesterday. The rumor, Mac, is that it's going to be like a watered down version of the new Xbox Series X that is digital only. Do you have any desire to own a console that is digital only? If it's like, let's say the main one, the main version is $500, the digital only version is $300. So just for strictly for the purpose of playing games, is that something that you would put aside your pride and say, you know what, I love physical media, but for $200 less, I would absolutely dive into this watered-down console?
No, I don't think that I would be willing to take even that big of a price cut to lose out on the ability to play discs. After all, we are looking forward to one of the things that I think is quite exciting is that we're expecting lots of backwards compatibility with the new Xbox Series X.
That's right.
I imagine that you know that loss of, you know, that lower price is going to wind up also being an issue with how are you going to play the older ones, you know, the older things from Xbox and 360 and the like, if there's no, you know, if there's no, what's it called? It's no disk drive.
No disk drive, yeah. See, and that's my thing too, man. I like the idea. We're talking a little bit of trash about Mac in the chat. Someone said, is Mac about to grow a thick beard sometime in the future? It looks good. And I said, he can't. Mac, are you growing a thick beard?
No, I am not. And your assessment is correct. I can't grow a thick beard. The thickest my beard gets is about what most people would be like, oh, you've been letting that grow for a few days.
Dude, I'm the same way. I can't grow with it. Like, I can't even get this part right here. Like, the connecting part from my mustache down to my goat. And I hate November, because everyone's like, yo, let's do No Shave November, man. I'm like, y'all do it. I'm just going to shave. And they're like, why? No reason. No reason at all. But anyway, discless Xbox. It's not my thing either. And I will be honest, my current Xbox is mostly digital games just because that's kind of how it's worked out. But I like the idea of a console being a central hub. If I'm going to buy a console, I want to be able to watch Blu-rays on it. I want to be able to watch 4K. And I don't want to just stream movies on Netflix. I want to be able to put a disc in there just in case it ever comes up. Or, you know, maybe there's that rare time when the disc is cheaper than the digital game. And so I buy the disc and I want to be able to play that on my console. So to me, it's good that they're giving people that option. Options are a good thing, but I don't think that that's the route I would go. And I think Mac and I are on the same page about that. Let's move on to the next news story. So much stuff this week, man. So Mac, the PS5, PlayStation rather, we know that last week they had postponed their PlayStation 5 event due to the passing of George Floyd and the protests that were going on. They wanted people to be able to focus. Since then, they have announced that there is an updated time. It is this Thursday, and this is on the PlayStation blog. It says, see the future of gaming on PS5. Join us June 11th at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. BST, PlayStation.com/PS5. Here is my question for you. Now, we've had the conversation many times about if E3 will ever exist again. If there will ever be another E3, because now everyone's doing their own thing. And I kind of want to rephrase it, because right now we're witnessing something historic. We're witnessing a game of chicken between Xbox and PlayStation. Neither of them have announced the price of their console. Neither of them have given us as many details as we would like. And it seems like they're battling to see who goes first. That alone, does that change your perspective on the future of E3, on the future of gaming conventions, period? Will everyone just live stream their stuff in the future?
Man, that's such a tough question. I mean, it has distinct advantages. Not having to share the space with somebody else, being in complete control of, you know, what's going on, the presentations, not being bound to some of the constraints of, for example, I mean, one thing I think most people don't realize, well, maybe not most, but at least some people I know don't realize, is that they charge through the nose at conventions for floor space. The Consumer Electronics Show that I always used to go to, I was floored when I found out how much they charged per square foot for that show. And for E3 and things like that, it's insane. It's like hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars. It's crazy. So, I mean, it's the lack of an expense. It's the ability to be the only thing that's going on right now. You're not sharing attention, or unless, of course, somebody wants to hold their thing on the same day as you, which, of course, can still happen. But there is the possibility, and the distinct possibility, of having your own thing going on and just having better control with less costs. But I don't know. In the game conventions that we've been to, in just the conventions we've been to, there's something special about going to an event in person, feeling the energy and the excitement. I don't think we will get rid of conventions or even video game conventions entirely, but I can certainly see that there will be, you know, what do they call them? Penny pinchers over at the video game companies.
Yeah, for sure.
People in the accounting department that are like, now, do we really need to spend tens of thousands of dollars for this whole E3 thing? I don't know. I don't know who's going to win that battle, but I know that there will be vocal people within the game companies saying no, and vocal people saying yes. So,
yeah, so there's the financial aspect. That's a huge point. There's also, think about how much time it takes to set that stuff up. Tickets. Go ahead.
I even did this one thing once where we went to, I kid you not, it was a scrapbooking convention. So I had friends who had a scrapbooking company. Don't you give me that look.
I'm not judging you.
I can't see you, but I can feel your judgment.
I literally just made a face when you said that. Dude, we're on the same wavelength. Except I don't like to scrapbook.
So I had never scrapbooked before, but they needed a salesperson to go to this thing. And so we went, we did the thing, we set up the scrapbooking, you know, the scrapbooking booth. It was, you know, a several hour thing the day before. There was takedown, just so much. And I see that that Pazzi mentions a somewhat similar experience with their local speedrun group, asked a local convention about the price of a small booth, and it felt excessive, and they never move forward with it. No way could we afford it. And it's just like, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it's crazy expensive. It's a, people need to go there, need to do the things. It's so much more involved than you think at first blush.
And the thing is too, they're doing it live, right? They're doing it live, Mac, when they do conventions. And there's so much that can go wrong with a live presentation. I mean, just ask Bill Gates, right? Just ask, you know, anyone who's ever done live TV, Saturday Night Live, they make mistakes, things go wrong. The benefit of doing a live streamed event is the fact that they can pre-record so many of the segments and then simply have someone moderate in between, right? Someone quote unquote host in between. And it just completely decreases the margin of error that's available. Also, the cost, like we said, is much, much less. The other point is, let's say that Xbox knows they're coming out with their console and Sony is as well, but Xbox really isn't ready to give a presentation yet. If they know that they are all going to be at E3, it puts Microsoft in a position to say, hey, we know Sony's bringing the heat. We've got to let people know that we're bringing the heat too, even though we're not ready to announce this yet. And so I like the idea of these companies playing a game of chicken and kind of waiting to see, you know, what are they going to say? When are they going to announce their price? And then, you know, coming with the uphook to the jaw and saying, now we're going to announce ours and knock them out. So that's kind of my stance on it.
And furthermore, one thing that that I had read about, and Galvatron brings up in the chat, that let's see, the industry hasn't been very happy with ESA overall. I've read that a lot of companies are wondering where their dues are going since the ESA hasn't been advocating for the industry as of late. And that's primarily the lobbying things, and I've heard some of that as well. As I do research for, you know, legalese and such each week, I haven't seen the ESA be pushing for much legislation on the parts of their, you know, their members and the like. So I can absolutely believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's keep it moving. Last news story, one side news story real quick. Destiny 2, if you guys are into that game, they did just announce their next 3 expansions of DLC. I feel like we would not be a gaming podcast if I did not mention that. But the last main story that I want to go over is on IGN.com. This is by Matt Perslow. And it simply says that PlayStation has announced an official Last of Us podcast series. The 8-part series hosted by writer and stand-up comedian Lom Galuka. They didn't ask Lom Galuka to do it.
You almost had me there. I was so happy. The elation, as happy as I was, then the despair just came in.
You know what, Mac? We'll get there. We'll get there. But writer and stand-up comedian Christian Spicer will explore the development of both The Last of Us and its Part 2 sequel. The first episode is available now, and it looks like he's basically interviewing different people. Neil Druckmann, Anthony Newman, Ashley Johnson, Troy Baker, and many others. So I think it's going to be a great podcast. I've never really been into listening to podcasts about a single game, unless it's an ongoing game, right? So like an Overwatch or an Apex Legends. I'll listen to that. Did we just freeze? Matt, can you still hear me?
I can still hear you. Yeah, I can still hear you.
Okay, we were lagging for a second. We might still be lagging, and that's okay. But anyway, that has been the gaming news for the week. Back to you, Mac.
All right, well then, let's talk a little bit of gaming history, shall we? So I've got one really big event. It occurred in 1984. So, 1984, lots of cool things going on. One big thing that was going on was the Olympics. And as a part of that, there was a game released in arcades leading up to the 1984 Olympics called Track and Field. It was by Konami. And in some localities, not in the US, but in several of the other localities, it had like an official license tie-in with the Olympics. It was that hardcore. Well, Konami decided that they were going to have a competition with these arcade cabinets and help hold the finals in Japan. It is still to this day the largest video game competition ever organized. And I'm going to put a little asterisk on that, because I think it's important to note we're talking about an actual organized competition that we may have breached that somewhat recently with things like, you know, maybe big, small competitions that it's just like, here's a competition and anybody online can hop onto it. I still think this very much counts as the biggest organized competition because there were points being tracked, there were advertisements being put out, you know, and not just like just a drop sort of thing, like a raid or a competition within the game.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, that's just the little asterisk there. But they had well over 1 million participants in this video game competition. And it was to get the best scores that you possibly could in track and field in the arcade cabinet. Now, they took the three top players from the United States and from Japan, and they went head-to-head in Japan on June 9th, so that's today, 1984. During that competition, we had ourselves a regular face-off between Team USA and Team Japan. And for, I want to say, the first time and only time ever, Team USA had themselves a clean sweep at the finals of track and field in Japan, which was contested because the American players had an interesting thing that they were doing. They had themselves they were using slightly different methods. At least one of them used they would take a tongue depressor or a comb or something, and they would use that to rock back and forth on several of the buttons at once in order to get, you know, build up more speed or things like that. Whereas several of the other, you know, a couple of the other American players had this tactic they would use by strumming their fingers and using all 10 fingers in a thing.
Gotcha.
Whereas the Japanese players just, just did their thing with two fingers, rocking it back and forth. And apparently, especially the issue of, you know, using a comb to do this rocking technique made a brief, a brief contestation. But they upheld it and there the finals went to the Americans. Now, I should have brought this up earlier, but the this international track and field finals in Japan, not just cool because of the time period it came in, not just cool because of how many people were participating in it, and not just cool because the American players, they wound up receiving like Seiko watches, or you know, it was I'm pretty sure it was Seiko watches and, you know, and medals and things like that, modeled after the Olympic medals, which were going out at the time. But it was also very, very cool because a little game designed by Bennett Foddy called Quap was based entirely, you know, he took his little spin on it, but track and field directly inspired the game Quap, which many of us have rage quit at. So, yeah, that's our one step removed, you know, our one step to the 1984 Olympics. Quap, track and field, officially licensed to the 1984 Olympics.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's just a little bit of legally, just a little bit of gaming history for you.
Getting ahead of yourself, Matt. Getting ahead of yourself.
It's true. I am.
Now we're going to talk about a segment called The Topic of the Week, where we talk about something that's relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. And this one is, you know, it's about our boy Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, who we've talked about before. Very, very, very smart man. And he seems to think that the future is different than the present, which I agree, Mac. That's just a general truth, right? Here's what it says. This is by Eddie Mackig on GameSpot.com. It says, Xbox boss Phil Spencer's vision for Xbox is beyond consoles. A system that sits under or next to your TV will be important for years to come, but Microsoft is preparing for a future where the company doesn't need to sell you a console to become an Xbox user. Spencer expanded on some of these ideas in an interview with Wired recently. He said he wants gaming to grow to a place that is more platform agnostic. He used Netflix as an example, saying it doesn't matter whether you watch on a TV or a mobile phone, the content is the same. Quote, you and I might watch Netflix. I don't know where you watch it, where I watch it, but we can have the same conversations about the shows we watch, Spencer said. I want gaming to evolve to that same level. I'm not going to elaborate too much on that, but he wants people to have the freedom to play where they want to play. Is Xbox going to become a Netflix type thing, Mac, or does he have something else in mind? Obviously, you can't read his mind, but what do you think about this? Do you like this idea?
So I do like the idea, but I feel like one of the things that we've discussed in the past is that exclusives are good for consoles. And so anybody who wants to sell a console is going to also want to have exclusives so that you have reason to buy their console over others. And I say that because I think it would be difficult to convince the other, you know, to convince other people to come away from that. It could be the future, and arguably we have a little bit of an inkling of that in the sense that you can do a lot of the same games on PC that you can do on Xbox, but I still think it'll be hard to convince others to come around, and I don't think you'll ever get Nintendo to get on board with that.
Yeah, now someone in the chat says, does this new gaming utopia have him making piles and piles of cash? Ishmobile asks that. I'm pretty sure it does. Like, I can't see it being more consumer-friendly and less company-friendly, if that makes sense. I think it may be more consumer-friendly in the level of convenience that it offers, but I think that it's definitely going to cost us something. Man, this is a tough topic because we don't really know what he has in mind, but personally, yeah, we are back up, Matt Galvatron. Now, here's what Pazzi says. He says, I can see where it's coming from. While tech isn't quite there, game streaming on a phone is really cool. The idea of having a controller that you can connect to a phone, a TV, a console, a PC, and every one of them is the same game and your same progression is appealing. Now, here's where I disagree with what Pazzi is saying. What Phil Spencer says sounds a lot like the Google Stadia. And we've seen what happens with the Google Stadia. Mac, why are you looking at me like that, man?
Nothing. I just have an instant reaction when we talk about the Google Stadia.
Yeah, and that's my thing is, it's effectively a Netflix for games, right? It's, hey, you have a controller, you purchase a Google Stadia subscription, you can do it on your tablet, you can do it on your TV. If you have a phone that's capable, you can do it on your phone. And it's all one big ecosystem, it's all one big happy family. But we've seen how it just did not work, right? Now, part of it is exactly what Max said. There were not any exclusives to the Stadia that made it something that people really needed to have. Also, the fact that you needed to be connected to the internet caused issues. So I don't know. Maybe Phil Spencer has something bigger in mind. But I just can't see this being a future that I want to be a part of.
You know, while we're on the subject of this, I always felt more compelled by the idea of having a game that had multiple iterations for different platforms. Okay. Not so much that we would play like the same game on the phone, but that we would have some component of the game that we could play on the phone that would help us in the main quest.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like I have been a fan of this since like the little, little memory cards that you could plug into the original PlayStation and have little Boko the Chocobo running around and picking up, you know, and picking up items in Final Fantasy VIII, or like the Poke Walker in some of the later gen Pokemon games. I feel like I would love to see integrations for games specifically for phones or specifically for tablets, you know, things that you could do. Like, for example, I know in the FPSs that are big with all the kids these days.
And some of the adults, I like my FPSs as much as the next 14-year-old.
Fair, and some of the adults, that there are times where you can, like, put down, like, an RC car with a camera on it and whatever,
yeah.
and send it around. I feel like something like that'd be interesting for you to be, and I'm sure somebody's done this already, but, you know, have the person who's on tablet do the scouting in an RC car or what have you. I don't know.
I see what you're saying, and I think that they've attempted that. I believe that the Division was supposed to have stuff you could do from your phone. Like, even if you're not at your console, you were supposed to be able to squad up and provide recon assistance for your friends, and it was just never implemented properly. Now, I believe that with the Dreamcast, wasn't there something similar that you could do? You could take the controller with you, you could do stuff when you weren't connected to your console?
I know that for the Dreamcast there was a VMU, virtual memory unit, but I don't know, and I, you know, it had that little screen thing on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know what you could do with it. I just know that it existed, and it was a thing, and, you know, it was right around the time of the good old Tamagotchis, but...
Yep, exactly.
But I just don't know what it actually did. I just know that it existed. So that could very well have been the thing. But I... stuff like that. That stuff very much appeals to me, and maybe it's my old school thinking, but I feel like that is where I would like to see more work done, rather than trying to fit the experience on the phone, even with great ideas like, you know, like the, what is it, like the GeForce Now. I think that's cool, but I, coming from the area where I did a lot of mobile gaming and mobile things, you know, from 2013, 2012 to 2017 or so, I was pretty active in, you know, in covering stuff in the mobile sphere. And I really, really came away from playing a lot of games, from trying a lot of different tech innovations, that trying to take the experience from a computer or a console and putting it onto a phone, I don't know if we will ever get to the point where I will feel like I would rather play it on the phone than on the console. Or I should say, I don't think we'll ever get to the point where I would feel, as I'm playing it on the phone, I'm glad I'm playing this on the phone instead of just waiting until I get back to the console.
And that's I agree 100%. So I once heard some movie directors say that when they make movies, they aren't thinking about the Blu-ray or the 4K. They're thinking about the theater experience, right? When mm-hmm. people film movies, when actors are making a movie, when people are editing a movie, they are thinking about in the movie theater, surround sound, huge screen, you know, people seeing a movie for the first time.
Is this why explosions are always so loud, but the dialogue's so soft?
That's exactly it, because they want that big, excessive, you know, grunt-like experience, right? That's what they want. And so I think that the same thing applies to gaming. If we reach a point where you can play your games on your phone instead of on your TV, I don't think that artists, I don't think that game makers are going to like that, because they're making the experience to be played on an HD TV. Right, they're not making this experience to be played on a 5-inch cell phone screen. You're missing out on the pixels. You're missing out on the sound. You're missing out on so much by experiencing the game that way. And I totally respect what Phil Spencer is saying and what they're trying to accomplish, but I don't know that game makers will all be on, game developers, I should say, will all be on board with that. And that's just, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I like the conversation in the chat. Pazzy and Ishmobile talking about GeForce Now. Mac alluded to that. Ishmobile yeah. brings up the concept of latency, which I think is huge in games. No one wants to play a first-person shooter or any type of game that requires timing and twitch muscles on something that has a bad internet connection or low refresh rate or anything like that. So that's kind of my thoughts on it. Mac, anything else you want to say about this topic?
Yeah, and I think the conversation about GeForce Now and Stadia and latency downloads versus this, that, and the other, as tech progresses, I hope that becomes less of a thing, because I don't think we've gotten a good solid taste of how it can be, right? Of how these applications can be. And again, I don't have any problem with the technology. You know, I don't think that the technology itself is inherently bad. I always hate on the Stadia because I feel like it's getting us farther away from, you know, or I should say it's getting us closer toward the digital only stuff that I just think is, you know, is not the future we want. But I would still enjoy experiencing the newness. I would enjoy experiencing it if we had all of the ducks in a row. You know what I mean?
Right. I understand completely.
Just to throw out there that I'm not totally against all of that, lest you think me mad.
Yeah, no, I'll end on this. Pazzy makes a good comment. He says, to give you a small vision of the future, I wanted to play some Destiny 2 again last night. While I was downloading the game, I also used GeForce Now to stream it. I was able to start progressing before it had downloaded. Now, that's a dope feature. I mean, no matter who you are, that's a really cool feature, being able to play a game while you wait for it to download, because Destiny 2 is 100 gigabytes. And it's frustrating. That's one of the major frustrations we deal with as gamers, is you get home, you have your new game, you know, maybe you bought the physical game like me and Mac because we're old school. You pop it in and then, oh, you got to spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes waiting to update. You know, first you got to install it, then you got to get the update files, then it has to restart the system. I mean, it's just nonsense. So that's a very cool feature.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what Xbox and Phil Spencer have in store in a few years, I'm sure. Mac, that's been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now it's time for us to take a look at a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart, and we want you, who are here with us live, to participate. Let us know if you think this should be kickstarted or whether it should be kicked out of here. And at the end of this, we as well are going to tabulate all the results and give our opinions on it. We do that a lot here, don't we?
We give our opinions.
Ish Mobile has been so kind as to post the link in the chat for us. It is a project called Go Fight Fantastic. So for those of you who aren't able to click over and take a look at it, Go Fight Fantastic is a 1-3 player action RPG game. It has a sort of isometric viewpoint, somewhat reminiscent of Zelda games, or some of the great Zelda games, rather. But it has an artsy style that's much more reminiscent of, well, it made me feel like a slightly more realistic Castle Crashers, with vibrant colors, a little cel shady. The background certainly evoked those kinds of ideas. And in this game, or I should say for this project overall, they are looking for $10,000 for this team out of Stockholm, Sweden, to make Go Fight Fantastic. They've got 21 days left to go, and they're around 25% of the way there. If you are curious about getting what it costs bare minimum to get the game, you're looking for about $16 for a digital US dollars, that is, for a digital copy of the game. And that also comes with the closed beta access. So sometimes in Kickstarters, you'll see, they'll be like, oh, here's the digital copy of the game, and, you know, pay a little bit more to get, beta access and the like. But nope, beta access for anybody who Kickstarts, which is kind of nice to see, if I'm honest. So the story, aliens are coming. You've got these various characters, such as, oh gosh, you've got Supernova, who's the tank, Dark Matter, who's the striker or heavy hitter, and then you've got the healer, who's Max Sparkles. They are supposed to have a few more characters, but those are the three characters that they've got ready to go. They're saying it's going to be local and online multiplayer, so you could do it either way, but you can do it with basically AI bots helping you, and you can swap in between the characters. It's real-time, beat-em-up, powers, and the like with each of the different characters, so, you know, if you enjoy a specific character, use it as your main. And then when it comes time for Mr. Nice Guy and I to play together, it'll turn out that we both like the healer, Max Sparkles, so one of us has to suck it up and try something else.
But, so it sounds like you kind of alluded to how you feel about this, but I will wait until we get to the end.
Sure. You know me, Mr. Nice Guy. I feel like if you're going to ask for my money, you need to show that you can bring together a game, and I don't want to see it in pre-renders. I want to see it in a playable demo, and this campaign has a playable demo. You can download it. Just a few things to note is that it obviously only has local multiplayer only because they don't have servers up for it
yet. Of course.
Gamepad only. They don't have keyboard and mouse support yet. And they haven't really done much with the sound or the music side of things. So just be aware for those of you who are going to give that a go. So, Mr. Nice Guy, what do you think about this?
I think it looks fantastic, man. I like the price point. It's almost like a dungeon crawler co-op type game, and I really like dungeon crawlers. I've talked many, many times about my love for Gauntlet Legends on the Nintendo 64. This, like you said, is more of a cel-shaded type of thing and probably runs a lot smoother than an old game like that. But I really like the look of this, man. It has kind of an anime feel. I don't know if you got that vibe from it, but
yeah.
It just looks like something that's a feel-good game. Now, did you already say, I didn't catch what consoles this is going to be on?
So this is going to be for PC, And a copy of the game when it's released on Steam Early Access. So it looks like they only have plans for Steam at the moment. I'm just scrolling down to double check. Yeah, platforms. The game will be released first on PC via Steam. Depending upon the success of the game, we're hoping to bring the game to the Switch, PlayStation, and Xbox. But at the moment, they're only shooting for Steam.
So, I mean, I'm not going to be a broken record. If you guys listen to the pod, you know how I feel about games like this and where they should be. And that place is the Nintendo Switch. My main concern about it, other than that, is the replayability factor. Is this something that I can play over and over and still enjoy? Or is it something that I play once with my friends and I feel like I got my $16 worth, but there's no real replayability? Other than that, I like what I'm seeing from this project and how it's organized.
Yeah, we've got a lot of people saying such things. Ish Mobile says that the team looks to have a great dynamic. That team, by the way, actually happens to be a husband and wife, plus a dog, from Sweden. And, well, you know what they say, the couple that designs games together stays together.
That's right.
Or maybe, you know, one of them stabs the other in their sleep. But, I mean, you know, making games can be stressful. That's all I'm saying.
Sure, absolutely.
But we do thankfully have that playable demo so we can evaluate, because this is the first game from these guys, so we've got a chance to evaluate what's going on. Now, I'm going to have to side with the majority of our people who are here live and say kickstart. Pazzy loves the fact that there's a healer and local co-op, co-op and healer has interest. I think overwhelmingly it's looking like kickstart from everybody here. It's a kickstart from me, and nice guy, one from you as well.
I definitely think that. Now, this raises an interesting question. I don't want to get too off topic, but how often are people still doing local co-op games? I want to know from our audience, do you guys still do local co-op with people? Now, let's forget COVID-19, right? Okay. Obviously, it's a biased question right now, but just generally speaking, are people still getting together to do co-op of games like this? Because I am not, and I would love to be, but I just don't think that it happens that much.
Well, Ishmobile does have kids to local co-op with, and myself, I, of course, you know, had the Mrs. the Mac to co-op with. I feel like I think it's probably true, and going to be true of everybody, that we don't local co-op as much as we would like.
Yeah.
I do think it's fair to say that given the option, most of us would like it.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm the same way. I local co-op with the friends. I used to do game nights, you know, a few months ago. But it's just a hard time, you know, and a hard age for us, you know, in our late 20s, early 30s, to get together. You know, the internet's really how these types of experiences are done with friends.
So I guess it's super nice then that this will have both the online or the local co-op. So best of both worlds.
Yeah, kickstart for me, for sure. I'm excited for it.
Excellent. And those of you who are doing this, you know, after the fact, let us know. Just yell out, kick or kickstart. We'll tabulate from here. But so far, as of this record, it is a unanimous kickstart. So congratulations. Go Fight Fantastic. The folks over there in Sweden at, it looks great. We're excited for it.
Yeah.
So that's been kick or kickstart.
Fantastic. Well, you know what time it is, boys.
It's Go Fight Fantastic.
What did you call it on accident? Go.
No, you said fantastic. It's Go Fight Fantastic.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm just fixing that.
Correcting me. Go Fight Fantastic. Hopefully you guys and girl get your game kickstarted. I'm rooting for you. Moving on to our next segment. It is called Nerdflex.
Woo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts, but sometimes we just come with questions that we have piled up. So if anyone has a question they want to ask us, a trivia question, preferably multiple choice, hit us in the chat with that. But to start, we do have some of our own. And Mac, I think they're going to be hard this week, which is good because we need a challenge.
Yeah.
So here is question number one. This is a Zelda question. What is the most notable difference between the GameCube and Wii versions of Twilight Princess?
So my first inclination is to say most is subjective.
I agree.
On the one hand, I feel like one of them had like better graphics, but I know that's not it. And I don't know if this is the game, but I know there's one game where there was like things were mirrored.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, there was like there was like things were mirrored. I want to say that like dungeons and stuff were mirrored. And I don't know which one had which, but I feel like that's what the most notable difference was.
Yeah, notable is very subjective, and my thought was the fact that with the Wii version you could use the Wiimote as a control. So you had motion controls. You could swing the sword with your Wiimote. And with the GameCube version, obviously, it did not have motion controls, so you could not do that. So that's what I think, but I could be totally off.
Well, I think both of those... I mean, again, yeah, subjective. What's the most notable? It's like, ooh. I mean, is it the fact that you've got a whole new and slightly different control setup? Or is the fact that... I say I go with one, you go with the other, and at least one of us will be right. And as a unit, we will have answered the question.
As a squad, we'll get hopefully. It right. All right, so Mac's going with mirrored. I'm going with controls. And the answer is, it says they are mirrored. Fantastic, you got it right. And I didn't even know that. I legitimately did not even know that before now.
And to be fair, I didn't know it either. I just knew that one game that was released on two platforms had, it was like mirrored. Because I had heard it said somewhere. But yeah, I couldn't tell you for certain. So I'm just glad that this turned out to be the one.
I don't know why they would even do that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. But it does look like we've got... We had Kane, who guessed right-handed and left-handed Link. And I guess that would also be true, because if it was mirrored, then that means Link's right-handed in one, left-handed in the other. So points to that. We do have a few questions in the chat.
Let's
if we want to hop over there. All right, we've got a question from Galvatron. The question is, in Nintendo's Punch-Out, when they dropped Mike Tyson from later versions, who was the last boss that replaced Tyson?
I think, was it Mr. Dream?
I think so. That sounds right. To me.
I'm pretty sure they just like renamed it Punch Out with Mr. Dream or something like that. And I believe it was because of all the stuff Mike Tyson was going through with going to prison due to some different accusations that they removed him from the game and wanted it to be more family friendly.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Mr. Dream. Mac, do you have a...
No, I'm going with you. I think that's 100% correct.
Let us know in the chat. What did he say?
He said, you guys are no fun because we got it right. Looks like we're not getting stumped this time. That puts us 2-2.
See, it's funny. Like, people have no idea how much we know about games, Mac. Like, we know stuff.
Or maybe it's just that our viewers know all the same things about games. Maybe in order to throw us for a loop, we need to have you share this with all your gaming friends so that they can stump us. Maybe we need new ideas in here. Just
saying.
That's
a good idea. That's a good idea. You guys have been listening for too long. Well, here is the third question for the day. It's a fighting game question. Which Street Fighter character has stretchy limbs and fire-based attacks?
Oh, Street Fighter? We're talking Dhalsim there.
Yeah. Ooh, Yoga Fire! Yoga Flame.
Oh, was it Flame or was it Fire?
No, he has both. He has both.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Both are moves of his.
I mean, although technically E Honda, his arm kind of stretches a bit, but you know, it's the fire, it's got to be Dhalsim.
Yeah, E Honda with the 100-hand slap. But yeah, I definitely think it is Dhalsim. And I think that Kane actually spelled Dhalsim wrong in the chat. Just to let y'all know how much we know about games, I believe there's a H in Dhalsim. I could be wrong.
Heck, I have trouble misspelling, you know, names of states in the U.S., so I mean, like, I'm not going to go at anybody for their spelling.
We love you, Kane. We're just giving you a tough time. Well, let's see what the answer is to this one. And it is Dhalsim with an H.
Ooh.
I feel like I should get a bonus point for that.
I think you do. Bonus points for you, Mr. Nice Guy. Well, that is... We clean sweeped that one.
We clean swept it. Let's keep things moving. That's been Nerdflex. Thanks for playing with us.
3 for 3. Be sure to, you know, get your questions ready for next time around. See if you can't stump us. All right. Now it's time for us to talk a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
And this case is a little something called Ubisoft v. EJoy. So this is a suit. It's going on right now in the Central District of California, directed from Ubisoft toward a mobile game that is almost definitely a ripoff of Rainbow Six Siege.
Interesting.
Called Area F2. I'll be calling it AF2 from here on out, just for briefness. Howdy house. So how big of a ripoff is this game? According to the claim in the lawsuit, AF2 copies plot, storyline, and gameplay. It also copies operators and characters, locations, maps and environments, weapons and equipment, sounds, video effects, animations, user interface, scoreboards, scoring and point system, and the overall look and feel of the game itself. And they point to in the suit as overwhelming support that these are accurate is that there is a lot of sentiment in the user reviews for the game AFT that it is a basically mobile version of Rainbow Six Siege. So yes, Ishmobile, it might be more appropriate to ask at that point, what doesn't it copy? And right. So Ubisoft wants what they call injunctive relief, which means in this case, EJoy, has to stop selling the game and take it down. And they want that immediately done. One thing about injunctive relief or any sort of injunction is that before you can get injunctive relief in your claim, you have to show likelihood of success on the merits. So no court, or at least no sane court, is going to give you an injunctive relief unless that court thinks that this is a slam dunk case, you know, from the outset. So we'll see if they get their injunctive relief. They also are asking for the game's code itself to be turned over. They want to know the sales numbers, and they are also asking for damages and attorney's fees.
You know what? I'm losing a little bit of respect for Ubisoft on this one.
So one of the things that we talked about back in episode 141, we talked about section 512 of the DMCA, right? And as a refresher, it's what's called the safe harbor provision of the DMCA, and part of that requirement is that for a platform to be in the safe harbor, they have to comply with certain things. Among them, that part of the requirement is that when a rights holder tells you, the platform, that someone on your platform is infringing, you as the platform are supposed to take it down. Well, in the suit, these guys are Ubisoft name checks both Google and Apple, going so far as to name them as co-defendants in the suit. In paragraphs 66 through 76, they set up how Google and Apple are profiting from this game being sold, and then kind of spike the ball at Apple and Google that's a sports metaphor for you all.
I like that.
In paragraphs 110 and 117, claiming that because they had let both Apple and Google know that this app was really far and away infringing on their content, on their copyright of Rainbow Six Siege, that they did nothing. They didn't take anything down, as they were supposed to, but furthermore, they were directly benefiting from the continued sales. And so, as they're spiking the ball, they're like, normally, you know, you would be like, well, hang on, safe harbor provisions. But it's just like, no, we can prove that we let them know that they needed to take this down. And number one, they didn't, but they continued to profit through their willful lack of action. So don't let them hide behind a safe provision.
Safe harbor.
Or a safe harbor provision
yeah.
in this. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes. I will keep you all updated as we get new things, but Ubisoft v. eJoy could be a pretty fun case. I think it's looking a lot like a slam dunk. There's a lot of really big similarities in this. To one of the things that you were concerned about, oh, why should they have to turn over the code of the game? A lot of that will probably do to help them evidence or show what was stolen. Because they're like, well, it's the same art assets, it's the same things, and being able to look at that code will show those sort of not so obvious things. Are the algorithms the same? And, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so if they're straight up stealing, I'm definitely against that. But if they just created something that's similar and it's, you know, you copied me, LOL, you know, like we're on the playground. Mm-hmm. I'm not about that life, right?
I'm not touching you.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the same thing happened when Fortnite came out. You know, the people who make PUBG were really upset, and I believe that they tried to sue and say, listen, we came up with this idea and you're taking it now and you're doing it better than us.
And the conclusion to that suit was you can't copy. Well, number one, copyright doesn't protect. It doesn't protect an idea. It'll only protect an expression. But number two, they were like, you can't copyright a genre.
Right, exactly. So this is interesting. I'm excited to learn more in the next couple weeks.
So I'll keep you updated, but that's been Legalese.
Awesome. And that has been our show. Now, before we go, we like to do one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff that we have been into. So if you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know the shows you have been watching on Netflix, on Hulu, on YouTube. Let us know the games you've been playing on your consoles, on your mobile devices, and anywhere else. Mac, you want to lead off or do I lead off? I forget. I never remember.
Sure, I'll lead off. Let's see. I have been watching... what have I been watching?
You've been on the road.
Yeah, I've been on the road. I haven't had much time for watching stuff, but back when I wasn't on the road, I was watching What We Do in the Shadows and watching Avatar The Last Airbender. And as for playing, I've also been on the road and I haven't really had much time for playing, but I have been playing with... you know, with like movie making. So I guess that's kind of like a game.
That counts.
Yeah, it still counts.
And we played GURPS last week.
Yeah, we did play GURPS last week. Lots of fun. Oh, and on that note, I'm going to be moonlighting. I'm going to play GURPS again on Thread Raiders on the Sunday the 28th in the afternoon. A Firefly campaign that I'll be DMing. Ooh. So that should be fun.
Nice. Now, where can people catch you for that?
Be Thread Raiders. Is the Twitch channel.
It's twitch.tv/ThreadRaiders. Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. Everybody check that out. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week, too, just so people know.
I guess one other thing, Mr. Nice Guy, is I probably shouldn't... I'll say it a few times as we get closer and closer, but in July, our podcast will be open for listener nominations for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. So, if you want to see us finally become a award-winning video game podcast, as I have been claiming to my wife for years, then you can help us.
I didn't even know this. I didn't even know this.
Yeah, I meant to surprise you at the beginning of the show, but yeah, we're in there. So it'll be listener nominations in July. And then it'll be, and then that gets you, that determines whether or not you get through to the next phase. And then the phase after that is they have like the judges and such come in. But I'll have details for that as it comes up. But you can't even see the list until listener nominations open up on July 1st. So
I'm gonna surprise you with something live one day. It's gonna be something big too.
Oh, you're
gonna
awesome.
Be like, what? I'm just gonna do it just to shock you. Anyway, dude, that's exciting. I'm hyped. All right. So anyway, stuff that I've been watching and playing. Now, my wife and I did watch Just Mercy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that movie. It's free in July or in June. It's Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx. It's about systemic racism. And it's a fantastic movie. It's not a feel-good movie. Like, you're not going to be super happy after you watch it. But it is a phenomenal movie, and I really did enjoy it. As far as other stuff that I have been watching, still watching Arrow, still watching a ton of YouTube stuff. Next week, I'm going to shout out some friends and the YouTube stuff they've been making, because there's just so much cool stuff that like mid-level comedians are doing that I want people to be able to see. As far as what I have been playing, Valorant, I've been doing a lot of that, a little Teamfight Tactics, and I did jump back into Super Mario Maker 2. Maction, someone put together, using the new World Creator update, a version of Super Mario Bros. 3 Lost Levels. And it is absolutely phenomenal. It's almost like the levels could have been made by Nintendo themselves. So, and then of course, you know, I hopped on and I played a little bit of Little Samson on my Raspberry Pi. And that's been it for my watching and playing. Mac, why don't you take us home today, man?
Okay, well, thanks everybody for coming around the show. Episode 143 would not have been the same without you. Thanks for sticking with us through technical difficulties. You're with us here, thick and thin, each week, and we appreciate it. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Party on, dudes. Be sure to catch us Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Mountain. And keep it nerdy, everybody. See ya.
Deuces.